completely locking down everyone for like, I think it was like 3 or 4 months. And all my friends are completely freaking out, right? Because they haven't been in a lockdown for long periods. And I swear to God, right? This is 100% true, legit. I thought it was a troll. But someone on my Facebook said legitimately, hey guys, I'm looking to buy a cow so I can start milking and making milk at home because of the lockdown.
What is Jay? Baby, don't curse me. Don't curse me no more. What is jank? I'm playing the world tree. Chains of Mephistopheles, a folk of storm. What is jank? Yeah, hey. I don't know why you play fair. You show me a devil, but I don't care. It feels so right to play cards wrong. Just give me that spice. What is jank? Pirates and Stumpy. Solidarity, exhumed off of gore. What is jank? Lashing and fairy. Six mana to fairy. Or metal worker. Yeah, yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Acadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that assures you that Risen Reef triggers off of unsettled mariner entering the battlefield. My name is Quinn Omari. I'm here as always with my co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going? And Brendan McBain. Bain, what's up?
Good, good. It took me a moment there, and then I was like, I know exactly what's happening right now.
And we have the usual crop back again, and we're once again, though, joined by a special guest, a different special guest than last time. Just a short hop across the 49th parallel, Lee Hung Nguyen. Lee, what's going on, my man? How's it going?
I'm good, mate. How are you? Just call me Mr. Lee or Lee. That's totally fine. Right. Yeah.
Good to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to get into a bevy of topics, including some of the insane decks you play online. But before we do that, Jeff, there's a little bit of housekeeping.
That's right. This is basically what we talked about last time. The big ticket on here is Puget Sound Battleground 3. Tickets are still available. That's very exciting. It's at the Angel of Winds Arena in Everett, Washington. October 2nd, I think, is the only legacy event aside from the trios. But there's all kinds of stuff happening the 2nd and the 3rd. So if you're thinking about going, definitely scoop up a ticket. We were just looking at some hotels. They're all pretty cheap. So it should be a really good event. And looking forward to that one for sure. And then we do have confirmation that Eternal Weekend North America is happening this year, which is good. But it is on Magic Online, which is... it's good in some ways. Don't have any dates on that yet, but that'll be another great thing. And probably look forward to Quinn and I streaming that week if there's God accounts again.
Yeah, presumably around Halloween. It's like typically when it is.
McBain's leaving me a note. There's Canlander there also at Puget Sound Battleground. Oh, not McBain. And it links in your companion app, which you sent a screenshot at McBain. I'm not sure what that does or means. It just shows you registered for an event that happens in 3 months.
So on Puget Sound Battleground 1, when I registered, I like didn't input the DCI number like in the reminder note as requested. I didn't read the instructions, obviously. but I had all sorts of issues round one when I was, or like when I was trying to register and stuff like that. It was
so weird when you don't input your DCI number to register for a tournament. You have all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
DCI, I know, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I had to like do a huge run around to like make sure I was actually in the event, even though I had paid. And then they're like, well, how did we know you've paid? I'm like, because the name's the same name. Anyway. So I was like vigilantly looking for my DCI number when I was going through, and then it's like, oh, it's not on here. But then it had, please punch in this code for your companion app, which links back to your DCI. So I don't know. news to me, but hopefully I don't run into the same situation again. But yeah, that was my little share. It was a new thing that I hadn't seen before from an event.
Yeah. And as a reminder too, I guess in general, that event is run basically as like an independent of WOTC GP. So I know last time and the time before they had like artists and stuff, which I mean, like it's going to be cool enough to play Magic in like the equivalent of an arena again in the first place. But then also one of the better parts of a GP is like checking out all the artists and everything that they're there, getting signatures, you know, looking at the vendors, all that stuff. Very excited for that.
The big one little add-on, as I always do, the fact that it's an Eternal specific event, it has that same Eternal Weekend vibe, but like Eternal Weekend West basically, and more well organized. the card selection from the vendors is really incredible. Like even though there was only three or four there, like it's a smaller event, the selection and the prices were like phenomenal. And I was happy to spend my time in between rounds, like going through all sorts of stuff. And I picked up quite a bit of cards.
Yeah. So one thing to note about that it's sort of like a mini GP is actually two things to note is that because it's in Seattle, which is the heart of Magic the Gathering, right? You get a lot of long Eternal players that have been playing Legacy, Vintage or whatever for a long time. So you get good talent and competition. And the other great thing is as well is because it's on the West Coast, a lot of Asian vendors will come over and start selling their wares as well because it's quicker for them to fly over the border. So I've been to the first one. I wasn't able to make the second one, but I heard it was like just as big, maybe even better. And it was just smoothly ran. And they do the one great system that I've always loved. Once I think it was Channel Fireball started at first, and then SCG started doing it, where they give you food buzzers when your on-demand vents are about to start.
It's the simplest thing, but it's
exactly. So yeah, they do the same there as well. So it's fantastic.
And it's so cool to walk around and just look at people playing like Vintage or Old School in like a big number. I think that's something that really benefits from being around Seattle too.
Yeah, definitely.
I was really conflicted to register for the Old School or Legacy event because the Old School ones are like so rare. But yeah, in the end, I was like, you know, I got to represent and play some Legacy. So
especially after this drought of in-paper events.
Oh, for sure. I fully intend to register for the pre-modern event the following day, though.
Yep.
That looks super awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. Very exciting.
All right.
Go. My house is clean.
That's housekeeping. Let's get down to business, though. Lee, you mentioned we can call you Mr. Lee, which I think is great, like promotion. Because that's where people will find you as well, either Mr. Lee or One Mr. Lee on various platforms. And if you're not following Lee on Twitch and YouTube, you should do that. But I guess before we get into that, I think we wanted to go backwards a little and just like ask the question we kind of ask everyone who comes on. How'd you get into Magic? How'd you start spending so much money on cardboard real estate?
Cardboard crack.
Like the rest of us? Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of got you into the game?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I have been a long-term Dota player. Dota player. Dota. I actually was on the beta team back in the day. So I used to help make icons for the Dota Reigns of Chaos version, 5.84C. Anyway, so that was
a good one. That was the best one.
Yeah, exactly. The competitive one. Yeah. So I've been really into like really complex competitive games, right? I played a bit of Counter-Strike back in my day and stuff. And then my friend one day randomly just said, "Hey, I'm playing Magic. Do you want to?" You know, she was just sorting her sealed deck or something. And I was like, "I don't know what it is." And she's like, "Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's a card game." And I'm like, "Is that like Yu-Gi-Oh?" And she's like, yeah, sort of. And then she sat down and taught me artwork. And I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." And then she goes, "Oh, you should come play at this 20-year anniversary event where like everyone got a free sealed deck." And it was just a free event to play. Had no idea how to play, right? And she's like, "Just come along." So I got my sealed pack. I opened it up. I spent the whole entire deck building time reading my Magic cards to figure out what to do. And then round one pairings came up and it was just a friend of a friend that was in that group circle. And he's like, "Do you want a high roll?" And I just went, "I haven't built anything." So he spent the whole, I just gave him the win and he spent the whole entire round helping me build a deck, which I built like mono red deck, I think, at the time. But over than that, I just had the most funnest time ever. And that's how I got into Magic. Like randomly my friends, gave me some spare time to teach me, and then I got to play in a sealed set. So from there, it was around, you know, Theros, RTR Theros. I was basically observing Magic during Innistrad RTR, which I heard was the best standard ever. and I missed out on that. But then I played in RTR Theros, and I was all in red-green monsters, mono-black devotion, mono-blue devotion. And yeah, and then it went from there. And then I learned about Modern, and I was like, oh, Modern seems good because standard's rotating, and I don't want to lose all the value in my cards, right? So then I started playing Modern, and I got addicted to Twin. Just playing lots of Twin. It's funny though, because I am a big mana player. I love doing the biggest things, right? But I was basically jumping back and forth between Twin and Tron. And I obviously played a lot of Tron because as some of you all know, I am a big colorless player. I love my thing there.
Right, and I want a land that taps for more than like two, preferably more than three mana.
Oh yeah, I just want to cast the biggest things. Like, I don't play too much EDH, which I should be honest, because it's like it incentivizes long games. But I just love doing the most stupidest, biggest things ever, and just hope my opponent has to deal with it. And that's why I love Khan Liberated, right? And then I also used to like confuse people and go to a tournament with Twin, and people would be like, "Oh, he's on Tron," and then I'd just be like, "Oh," and turn Exarch. And then Twin got banned in Modern, and I was kind of very sad. So then I took that passion into Legacy, which the Legacy scene in Sydney, you know, we get like there's a lot of LGSs in the city, and then we get an average 20 to 25 people back in the day when I was playing. But out west, you get like 40 or 50 people playing, which is kind of cool. But it's just a little bit more time to travel, and that's what got me into Legacy. And then I just played all that stuff, you know.
What was like your intro deck in Legacy?
Eldrazi Stumpy, because I was playing Tron, right? So, you know, I had all the Eldrazi and then got into Cloud Post. I'm known for playing a lot of Cloud Post. That's my favorite deck. And
that's what, when I think of Lee, I think of Cloud Post.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of the sort of content creators and also the admins for the Cloud Post Facebook group. We also have famed Tony Murata in there as well, which is the god of green cloud post. If you don't know, he streams all the challenges every weekend, and he basically it's easy for him to tell you when he doesn't top eight rather than when he doesn't, so because that's how often he top eights in his tournaments. He's the god. But I love cloud post, but I also love jank. I love playing the stupidest decks that don't make sense just because I love having fun.
Was that kind of what drew you into Legacy? That's kind of the thing that I found interesting. McBain gave me, I guess it's not a Cloud Post deck, but a big mana colorless deck. The first mm-hmm. Legacy tournament I played,
Mud.
Local was, yeah.
Mud.
And I just remember being like, Legacy's crazy, and like seeing everyone's decks and being like, you can do anything.
Yep.
And that's what kind of like brought me back in the format, because it just reminded me of when I was a kid and played. You know, where you're just, gotcha. What do you want to do? You can do it.
Yeah, for sure. No, Mud is actually one of my more favorite archetypes, along with like Ugin's, Baby and Big Ugin. But I think that it's just the lore of doing powerful stuff, but also knowing that cards exist in the format to keep everyone in check, right? People always complain. I've always been on the positive, optimistic side of Legacy, where, you know, sometimes there are certain strategies that are way too powerful, right? Like I am... My stream and myself is, we're an anti-Wasteland stream. We also really, really hate Delver. most recently, I put 100,000 channel points to redeem for someone for them to force me to play Delver. And then my moderator made sure that he attended every single stream I did, and then got me to play Delver after saving up how much? It was like, yeah, like 16 or 17 months of since COVID started of channel points every single day, attending my stream and then making me play Blue-Red Delver. That's kind of hilarious. We actually went 4-1, and it was like nearly a 5-0. I think we just got janked out by Witherbloom.
Oh wow. So, you know, I feel like you're doing that though, and that's how you lose the trophy, and it's like, yes, this is what I want.
I think there might have been some
doing like the thing you wish you were doing.
Yeah, there was some unconscious bias there. You're like, ooh, this is like jank and kind of like twin. These are all the things I love. So you just unconsciously played bad and took the loss for that one.
Yeah, I Yeah, I mean, Delver is just silly. And then we also had monkeys. It was only recently we played the Blue Red Delver stream. And yeah, it's just literally sometimes monkey just won the game. Like, mm-hmm. it's just a 2-1 that does everything. And it doesn't even say or. Like, I'm a terrible R&D person to make magic cards, to be honest. If someone asked me to make magic cards, it'll be way too powerful, right? But like, the fact that the monkey gets a treasure and a card, it's silly.
I had that exact thought this morning when I was driving to work. I was listening to Everyday Eternal, and they were just talking about Ragavan. And I was like, you know, if it was an or, like you had to choose one or the other, I was like, would that be even playable? Like, I'm not sure.
Still.
It'd be much cooler.
But it's very powerful the way it is. You made an interesting point there where there's kind of this spectrum where you have like these aggro decks and tempo and then mid-range and then control. Mm-hmm. And then at the top end of control, there's almost not like a name for it other than Cloud Post. Like, that's what it is. It's always going to be some giant big mana thing where it's just like, if you let them do that, they will just crush you. And like, control can't hold a candle of... No, it's a candle of...
Candelabra?
Candelabra. That's, yeah. I was crossing the
it's like, he's going somewhere with there. This.
I was, yep. I had it. And then I was like, I messed up the name. But I always love that aspect where control, when they bump into
Clubhouse. That
literal, like, Eldrazi coming through the void, and they're just like, oh no, it's here. And they just lose. Like, there's nothing they can do. Too much mana. The cards are too strong. Can't counter half of them.
Cast triggers.
It's all bad news.
Yeah, funny that, actually. So, like, even though me and Anurag are kind of good friends and stuff, like, just through the streaming communities and stuff, we're actually kind of enemies when it comes to our deck choices, because he plays Bent Miracles, or, like, before, previously, Blue-White Miracles, maybe Jeskai Miracles, and I play Cloud Post. And more specifically, I play Colorless Cloud Post, which is more hate against control decks than the Mono Green one, because the Mono Green is more reactive, right? They're trying to play stuff like Crop Rot, Elvish Reclaimer, Green Suns, to you know, turbo out going in it, but if their spells get countered, they're sort of just like, I don't have card draw, I need to figure out how to rebuild, right? But they'd be able to get bigger faster. Yeah. Well, the colorless version is what I'm known for, is like, I'm going to play Chalice, Trinisphere, Big Ugin, like, it's just, and Khan, it's like all these things, it's just like, you have to deal with literally cards I'm about to cast now, or you're in trouble, right? Everything is impactful in that deck, essentially.
Yeah, my deck is tons of mana and giant haymakers, and there's nothing in between.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's like pseudo card draw through Baby Ugin and stuff, and yeah, it's just one of my loves. And when you mentioned Metalworker recently, like, it's the little train that could, right? I'm just like, oh man, I love Metalworker so much, and I wish you could play more. And I always try to force it as much as I can.
And that little kid feeling of like when you activate the Metalworker and you just like cautiously show your hand to the opponent, and they're just like, I'm gonna, and you don't even finish the sentence and your opponent's just like picking up the cards. They're like, I'm so dead. Like, this is too much mana. The cards are too big and I'm gone.
Yeah. Turn one, Lightning Greaves, turn two Metalworker. Let's go.
Exactly.
There's something that's just like so pure about having to show the cards, and you're just like, look what's coming.
I don't care.
So you did the Eldrazi Stompy early. As someone who has Eldrazi Stompy and has been known to enjoy it from time to time, is it something that you ever go back to, or do you just stay like away from the aggro-y strategy and more in the big mana side of things?
No, I do swap back and forth. I feel like Eldrazi Stompy is my most competitive deck, just because I've had the most experience with it. I enjoy, like, there's a difference between, because I'm a jank magic player. So I, you know, normal people, like, it's a tournament, I'm paying money, I want to be competitive, I want to win. But I don't have that mindset when I play magic. I'm always like, all right, am I here to win or am I here to just have fun? And most, I do weigh in like on the 70 to 30 of like, most times I just want to have a good time, all right? But there are times where I'm just like, okay, this is a serious tournament. I should play a competitive deck. Just because I really want to win or I need some credit or, you know, it's a GP or something, most times I will play Eldrazi Stompy because it just has a competitive edge to it most times, where it's like, you know, Thought Not Seer is broken, Reality Smash is a literal definition of a pushed card. And then, you know, and then you can also go big with Ulamog, or you can just keep it small with Mimic, right, and go all in. You just get the insane stars. It's like, it's a definition of, it's a snapshot of Watsy's, you know, mistakes in a meta at one time, right? It's a snapshot of history. Like, remember Eldrazi Winter in Modern? They just took that and put it in Legacy.
Yeah, it's extremely made it funny that the deck is just, it's like, here's a bunch of, you know, soul lands, and then here is creatures that all came out in two sets. Like, that's just the whole deck.
Exactly, yeah. And then I remember Saffron Oliver posting about it. He just like, what happens if we put all the soul lands in one deck and made it Legacy? Like, literally, it's the set deck as of today.
Yeah, the fact that it hasn't changed in so many years as well, like, there's a couple sideboard fluctuations and things like that. Maybe the GTA gets played in the main, maybe not, that kind of thing. But it's so consistent, so powerful, so proactive. I love that aspect of it. Like, it's just like, I'm going to play. So like, the games are, you either run your opponent over or they're pretty interesting, honestly.
Yep.
And I definitely enjoy it from time to time. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
It's that consistent that you can throw away three cards and play three green cards that you don't have base, you don't have green in your deck, right? They play three Once Upon a Times. So you don't have forests. It's just like, so I think maybe you can replace the Urborg now with a Yamamaya Cradle of Growth or whatever. But yeah, back then they're just like, all right, let's put three Once Upon a Times in because they're free.
I remember seeing that at, I think, Eternal Weekend maybe 2 years ago. We're at a side event. Do you remember this, McBain? And there was a guy playing Eldrazi. I don't know if he played against you or somebody.
He played against me.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't know.
Like, keep Once Upon a Time? And it was like, well, yeah, they're playing like Elvish Spirit guys. That was like their own
green.
Exactly.
Like,
yep.
It was nuts. And then that was just like the thing to do. That person was like a year ahead of the curve.
Yeah, they had all eight Spirit guides. Then they had the Once Upon a Times. And they had the Chrome Moxes.
Oh.
And their whole game plan was turn one, Blood Moon or Magus of the Moon or bust. Like, that's what they were doing.
Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon? Wait, are you talking about Eldrazi still?
No, you're talking about Blood Sun. All right. There was a Blood Sun version with Grove.
Oh, yeah.
No. So the version that, or the deck that I believe you're talking about that I played at Eternal Weekend wasn't Eldrazi. It was just playing all the Spirit Guides and everything. But,
there was definitely one at the side event that was Once Upon a Time Eldrazi, and it was very odd at the time because you're like, how do they cast this?
But, yeah,
it's great. I was that pop up. Like, mm-hmm. Now we're like, yeah, of course you would put it in there. Like, it just like smooths out the draws, you know? Like,
does
you have a deck where you're just, all you want to do is go like threat, 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 and then your opponent's dead, and it's like the perfect card. You know, that you end of turn, or if they have days, you play a land and then play it, and you're just like, great, I'm going to hit. If I need a land drop, I'm hitting a land drop. If I need a mimic, I'm getting a mimic. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really impressed, actually, like, back in the winter when I was playing Eldrazi online a bunch, and I didn't like the Once Upon a Time idea. It didn't appeal to me. I wanted to stick with the Simian Spirit Guides and just more Endbringers, because I love that guy. That's like my favorite guy in the whole deck.
Yep.
The games always get super exciting and interesting when you get an Endbringer in play and the game progresses. But I eventually saw someone where they had done the math about why you want specifically three Once Upon a Times. And it's like the likelihood for it to be in your opening hand, and then later in the game, in the first like 12 turns of the game, the likelihood of you're going to draw a dead one. And they were trying to basically like solve that, do the calculus on that equation, and the answer was play three. Don't play two, because then you won't see them in your starting hand. Wow. Don't play four, because then you're going to draw them on like turn three or four and just be like, well, this is a dead draw. So there's definitely a lot of work going into those decks. And like, Eldrazi really rewards you for that like early game of actually deck building, because metagame is like your mid game, and then actually starting the game is your late game when it comes to Eldrazi Stompy. So,
you know what's funny? All this like crazy effort and time that very intelligent Magic players put into figuring out statisticians, and also just like all this complicated maths they could totally put into bug fixing on Magic the Gathering Online.
Those are the people you need to hire. Yeah,
exactly. But, right, they should make Mitko open source.
Oh yeah,
I thought you were going to say like World Hunger or something. But yeah, Magic Online bugs. That's way more important. So you had mentioned something about jank, and when I was kind of like, I don't want to say doing research because that would be far too generous of my effort, but what is jank? Can you give us a definition and like a bit of an idea of like what jank is?
Okay, so uninitiated? Of course. How I perceive jank is in two lenses, right? My first lens is you want to play cards that you like or you think is interesting, that is generally unpopular in your deck. Or have some sort of strategy that is like, you know, not to the standard mediums of what a tiered deck is. So, you know, my strategy is like off the wall or kind of different or interesting, you know, and you want to try cards to go along with this idea. Or, you know, I mean, that's the general definition, I think, of jank. But like, yeah, that's how I also see it as well, where jank is like, I just want to try a different strategy that's not norm to the regular way that people play Magic.
Mm. Yeah, I think I agree with that absolutely. And I always like when we kind of queue up with something for jank because it feels like almost like there's some pressure off because you're like, look, I know on paper this is not tier one. And I know in practice this isn't tier one. So, you know, you just get to like, we're going to go out here and if this does its thing a few times, like that's better than winning.
Yeah. So look at people like Thraven Yu does a lot. I don't know, Bosch. Bosch and Roll, Brian Cover, I think his name is. He's generally more on the spiky side because he's a very competitive player. But if you look at Thraven, Phil Gallagher's you know, content that he makes on YouTube, along with like me following the same pattern, is that we are there. Like if you go in with the mindset is that we're going to go through this league to have a good time, mm-hmm. right? And winning, like if you win, great, it's a bonus. If you lose, then we can learn from our mistakes, right? That's how you should always approach Magic. And that's when you go in with the mindset of like, I'm going to play a weekly with my friends and I'm going to just try this stupid thing in my deck. Win or lose, you're going to win, right? Because regardless if you go 0-4, you still had a good time with a bunch of people that have the like-minded you know, interests of the same game as you, right? So, you know, you don't have to burn yourself out. Like, I like to look at things on a positive, optimistic side, right? I play Legacy. I play Magic to have fun. Winning is a bonus.
It's definitely also worth it when you're playing in person and the first time you get, like, you know, that extra spicy card out. Like maybe you had a couple things that are borderline and your opponent's like, that's a little outdated, I don't know. And then, you know, you slam your, like, I don't know, maybe destructive flow, and they're like, oh, what the fuck, like that's the entire night is worth it.
Yep. I actually played a destructive flow natural order deck at one of my paper tournaments once, and the guy's just like, wait, hold up, you're playing Birds of Paradise and Birds of Paradise and Utopia Sprawls and Natural Order to get Worlds by Worm, but at the same time I just had Destructive Flows in the deck, and the person was on depths, so he's just gone like turn one, Thought Sees Me, and he sees like two Destructive Flows in my hand. I'm like, yeah. He's like, what? What is this card? No basics in the deck, just all non-basics, and I'm just like turn two Destructive Flow pass, and he's like, I can't play Magic for the rest of the game.
That was the first video of yours like a week ago that I watched when I was kind of brushing up on some of your videos, queued it up, and it was just, you had this destructive flow list with monkeys in it.
Yep.
And it was kind of like turbo destructive flow with a bunch of shenanigans, and I was immediately hooked. I was like, because like I remember when that card came out, and it was actually like saw a little bit of play and all that, and it was very exciting. It was played in like extended as well, and like,
oh,
I have a strong affection for killing lands. Nice. And it's one of the reasons why I really like playing lands, because, you know, it's much more of like a prisony kind of style deck. Mm-hmm. So something like Destructive Flow is very appealing. And to know that you've actually played it in paper as well.
I played a lot of paper.
Oh, that is incredible.
Yeah, because the way I used to kill people in the paper version was, this is when Ren and Six existed, right? It was a bunch of dorks, right? Because the dorks survive the like, you know, you sack your lands. You have Ensnaring Bridge, you have Destructive Flows, you have Ren and Six to go get your fetches. So you have tons of fetches to get basics, and then you have Master of Cruelties, to kill people, and then you have three sudden shocks, right? Massive, so you massacre cruelties. All these people under the bridge, you get them to one, and then you sudden shock them. And the reason I had sudden shock in the main is because I hate, really, really hate Delver, right? So it's just like, when someone's like, flip my Delver, hold up days, I'm like, sudden shock. They're like, okay.
They always flinch. Everyone flinches to sudden shock when they have a daze in hand. I've done it so many times. Sudden shock your glistener off, and I'm like,
it's fine.
Resolves.
Yeah, it's like you hit the brakes on them when they were going 100. You just I played sudden shock in Painter for off and on. But yeah, that feeling of like, oh, I need to survive the early turns. The Painter player is going, I need to kill them early and establish pressure. They run in turn two with their Delver and they're just like ready for bear, and you're just like sudden shock, and they're just almost like lurch forward on the table. Like, yeah, get out of here.
You've gotten me so many times, like sudden shock on like Mother Runes or something. It's like, I'm gonna set this up, I'm gonna get through here. So you're just like, nope.
Sudden shock is phenomenal too when there's like several layers in a game where it's like, when this happens, X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of insert the needle right at the bottom. You're just like, I'm gonna sudden shock that. It's like, oh no, the house of cards just comes crumbling down. Yeah, sudden shock's incredible. I don't know about this, like sudden, was it sudden edict? The one that they just printed?
Yeah.
Black one, yep.
That one seems less exciting. It seems more just like a generic kind of ham-fisted approach. Cheap.
It's good in curses. Really, really good. Like, I think it's a four.
I was
going to
say, Reaple Cheap, yeah. I bought four because I love that deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Oko Killer. That deck is like, I've seen him play live, and I'm just like, wow, this deck destroys Oko so bad, because they can't Elk with five mana enchantment. It's like you turn one Dark Ritual into Off a Petal, and then Chrome, Ancient Tomb.
Yeah.
Play a turn one, whatever.
Curse of Misfortunes.
Yeah, Curse of Misfortunes. And it's like, can't abrupticate this. yeah, it's so good.
So that would fit the definition of jank?
I would agree.
The Curses deck? Yeah.
Curses, yeah. It's like playing on a different angle that people don't expect. But I think, that's good jank. That's tiered jank, because it's competitive enough and has a good enough advantage, right?
But yeah. I feel like any deck where there's only like really one person that puts up results, and they put up consistent results, is still kind of by definition jank, which would be like Reaple Cheap and Curses and like Tony Scaponi and like Mono Red like Storm. Mm-hmm. Like those, you look at the two people that are like, this is their deck, and it's really the two of them.
Curses is powerful though.
It is,
Chalice,
it is.
I think right now Chalice is kind of bad, but when Chalice is good, Curses, like I played it and I think I like 4-0'd it. It's just a weekly, but people were just like, what do I do? And I'm like, I think you just keep dying. Like I was not, that wasn't like me needling them. I was like, I just get this curse, I guess, next turn.
The one where Gideon dies, I can't remember what it's called, but where like you have to like sack a creature or planeswalker or
overwhelming life. Oh, the black one, right?
Yeah,
what's that called? Yeah, it's a seven mana black enchantment. There's that and Overwhelming Splendor, like the clock is so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so back in the day when Ripple Trip was playing that black one, the one that would make them lose five life or sack a planeswalker or a creature, it was actually bugged on Modo. So it wasn't working. So he had to use the other one that has madness for three or four mana or something, where when they draw a card, they lose life or something.
I think it's like when any player draws a card, they lose two life or something.
They lose two life.
I definitely like copy-pasted a Reaple Cheap list at that point, and I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this curse. Like, why is this the one that I'm
trying to own that card in paper. And then I found out that, he played it because the other card was bugged. And I was like,
I think it's finally fixed now, but it's kind of sad, though. Like, it feels really bad that you have to change your strategy because the cards aren't working properly. But it is what it is, right? I think it finally got fixed.
One day they'll fix that sliver bug.
Yes, they did. I think
they did?
Yeah, so
I think
someone recently.
Yeah. So I think, was it Mengucci or someone popular had retweeted it, and then it finally got fixed. But yeah, he was waiting like 3 years for it. Because speaking of that, because I talked to Daniel Noonan's like quite regularly, because we've been trying to collaborate on doing a stream together. Because my other pet deck in Legacy is Elementals, And when you said Risen Reef at the start, my head blew up. I'm just like,
oh. I was waiting to bring up talking about Jank. I was like, you have to tell me about Risen Reef, Lee.
Oh, my boy, Risen Reef. Oh man, so I love these of Elementals, and then when the recent was it Modern Horizons 2 with Solitude and Subtlety. I mean, Subtlety was okay, but Fury. Oh man, my brain was blowing up every time a new Elemental came out. I'm just like, ah. Subtlety is like everything we needed and wanted, because Unsettled Mariner is white, and I also play Forceful Will in my Legacy Elementals, so it just works out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like even just looking at your YouTube channel now, it's like there's a good percentage of those decks are Risen Reef decks.
Like, oh, for sure.
It's so sweet.
So you know what's funny about Elementals and what I've been experimenting? I haven't played this on stream yet, but Alone, right? So a lot of the Elementals are 3 or less, right? Apart from like, you know, Omnath, the good one, and Solitude, which you can flash. But what happened in the game once was my opponent played Alone. They're playing Alone, right? The regular Alone deck. And I was like, okay, I can cast my creatures. So when they cast the Cavern Harpy, I cast Risen Reef, and then I drew two cards. I mean, I revealed and looked at them, and I was like, wait, I can keep going. So I played a Thunderkin and Awakener, and I was like, I drew another two cards. And I was like, okay, Phantasmal Image, and then that became a Risen Reef, and then I drew three cards. And I was just like, I'm drawing more cards than my opponent. So then I eventually drew a Flicker-Wisp and flickered his Alone, and then I was like, ha-ha. And then I realized, oh, it comes back at end step. And then so during the end step, I ran out of cards. The opponent kept trying to draw more cards to win, and they couldn't get it, and they just scooped it. So it was like, they have that video there on the video stream there, but it's hilarious. I was just like, I should play Alluring in Elementals.
Just chuck like one Thassa's Oracle in there, easy.
Easy.
That's sick. So how long have you been streaming now?
Literally since the start of COVID. So the first day I streamed was roughly about like the 10th of March, 2020? When did COVID? 2019? I think it was 2020. Yeah, 2020. So COVID, like officially, you know, people were announcing and going more official, but my office also made us work from home roughly at the start of March. So I was just like, cool, let's set up at home. And then I started streaming. I've been streaming every single week consistently, and then eventually I got sponsored by Cardholder, and I'm now streaming twice a week, every Wednesday at and every Sunday. Sometimes I swap it over from Saturday to Sunday if I feel like there's a tournament on or whatever. But most times it's Wednesday and Sundays. Yeah, just every single week.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's an excellent use of a global pandemic, I think.
For sure.
You know, you're really putting it the effort into the community. I didn't realize it's that recent that you started streaming. Like, was it something that you had like kind of thought of, and then this just kind of kicked off the edge, or what kind of drove you to it?
Well, I mean, I always loved playing paper, right? The reason I play Magic, and the reason I mentioned Dota before, is I love and breathe Dota, right? I love that game. Problem is, the community is very toxic if anyone's played any MOBA.
We'll have a second podcast, Lee. Me and you can talk about Dota.
Oh, mate, 100%, let's go. I love MOBA's game, right? But the community is just not the greatest. While when I find when I play Magic, the interaction with people, meeting people and seeing people on a regular, even though there are people when I see faces and I'm just like, hey, I don't know your name, but I see you around at the tournaments. You do the gentleman's nod where you just nod at them, and they're like, "Yeah, yeah," and you're like, "Yeah, you play Magic, yeah, you too." And that's what I love about Magic, right? The community, the people, and I've just made so many amazing friends. And having moved from Australia to here, luckily I had this hobby and this interest where I could just go, "Oh, I could go to my local LGS and meet some nice people and have a good time." Now, coming to streaming, like you know, I was just like, "I'm gonna be at home. I can't play Magic and paper. I need to respect the rules, right?" And then I was like, I still want to connect with my friends, so I was like, let's just try streaming for once. I've never really streamed before, and really just jumped into it. And I really enjoyed the community, especially on Twitter, about all the different streamers that stream as well. So it's really made me feel welcomed, and just sort of still talk to my friends while I play my favorite game.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest thing I think we will talk about missing is like, yeah, when COVID started. I mean, obviously there were a lot of big real world problems, but from the Magic sphere, yeah, it's just like feeling disconnected from people. I think that really fits in with what you said earlier, like, you know, looking for the positives and looking for like opportunities. Really jumping on that. I mean, through the pandemic as well, like I've started watching more streamers, and I'm definitely thankful that you started picking things up, because you know, you play the, even though we don't play the same decks, you do the types of things I like to do. When you talk about like, I like big things, I'm like, yeah, I like big splashy plays that you tell your friends about.
Yeah, for sure. Just don't have, having fun, really. Like that's mm-hmm. that's why I'm there. That's why I like to stream. I just like to you know, enjoy my time, even though I burn a lot of tickets because I would lose a lot. And also, I don't accept subs on my stream. I haven't done that for the last 18 months. If people do sub to me, it's very hard for me to refund them. But I just want to support people that actually are struggling during a pandemic, that work full time or stream full time. That's more important, because I'm very fortunate to have a regular job. But outside of that, you know, I just really enjoy connecting with people. As you can tell, I'm very extroverted and I love to talk. So streaming sort of aligned to that.
I want to bring it back to the, I want to say local community, because I feel the Seattle area and the Vancouver area is kind of like part of a greater legacy community. Mm-hmm. And I want you to talk a little bit about, just paint us a picture about the Seattle community. We've had Jordan Ayasaka on here before. He talked about that a little bit. I'd love to get your perspective, and then maybe start to kind of move things into like how the world is healing and what the future of legacy looks like.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, Magic the Seattling is a Facebook group on that it revolves around just magic in general, as a Facebook group. And it's rather large, right? I think like 4,000, maybe 5,000 people, a lot of people in there talking about magic, which everyone is quite, you know, switched on in there. And then I reached out to the stores. I said, hey, you know, since paper magic is slowly returning to the LGSs, all right, because I think they quoted that Washington State is at like 60% double vaccinated rate, which is like the pretty much one of the highest compared to New York, right? New York completely going back to normal. Washington State, you know, don't need to mandate masks, but you know, some people still wear them, which is completely fine. But the stores, they're slowly opening up and letting people back in, right? And I think as you go, half the people are still wearing masks, the rest aren't really. But long story short is that nature is healing. I think that's a really important quote that people had mentioned on Twitter. Stores are slowly bringing back events, and people are just being really respectful of other people. Like, if you're wearing a mask, completely fine. I understand why. But if not, we're all just here to come back and do the one thing we love. So the Seattle scene has definitely been slowly coming back. Not all the stores, I'd imagine like maybe 30-40% of the stores have slowly opened up. One of the big heavy hitters is Mox Boarding House. They just started again in July, right? And funny that actually, starting next week, and this is like a little sneak peek, 2nd of August, we're bringing back commentating, you know, for the weeklies at Mox Boarding House in Ballard. So I won't be there next week, but I'll be there probably. Actually, will I be there next week? No, I'm not there next week, but I'm there the week after. And we're going to bring back commentating. You know, weeklies have been going on for the last week or two at Mox, and just other stores as well. They're slowly bringing it back, and the scene's been really good. It's been coming back slowly.
That's going to be awesome to see the commentary come back. I will definitely be living vicariously through the weekly streams.
Yeah, for sure. They're not doing Bellevue yet, just because of like, you know, they had to move stuff around, but Ballard is definitely coming back, and yeah, we'll be Jordan. Yeah, not Jordan. Someone else is coming on, but yeah, we've got definitely people coming in, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think I saw Gavin Verhey tweeting about Mox Boarding House being open. He's like, I don't know if it was like a nature is healing quote, but it was something to that effect. And the Ballard location specifically, like, well, the inside of the store isn't as grandiose and spectacular as the other one, but
Bellevue, yeah,
the location there and just like being able to walk around and stuff like that is great, and I love that location. And I think there's like some new bars and stuff opening up in that area as well, so
oh, nice.
I'm excited for that one to open. So one of the things that was really famous for the Mox tournaments was their series, and they had, was it every like month, basically. And then they had it, the tickets going to Eternal Weekend and the big competition. And then it kind of changed. And then we had maybe like two events that fired before COVID kind of shut everything down. So I know there was a huge community uproar around when that transition happened. And there was a bunch of polling and like collecting community feedback and really working on things. And I'm curious where that's landed now and where things are going. Like, do you know a lot about that, or can you speak to that?
I actually do. I'm in the community that is working with Mox on that. So yeah, as you know, we used to have the 1K Moxes every month. Eventually they wanted to diversify to different games, which makes sense, right? There's a lot of games coming out and just different formats as well, right? You gotta work the space. So we convinced Mox to do 3Ks just every so months, every two, maybe every 3 months, and they agreed. But yeah, we are in the works, Sarah. Shout outs to some of the main figures in that group, Marco Tessia and a few other people in that group as well that have been trying to bring that back. Mox has been very cooperative, been really awesome in trying to bring those large-scale legacy events back to the community. It's just, again, it's just about timing and figuring out the calendars and the dates, really. It's nothing too, like, against, we don't want to support legacy. They 100% love supporting legacy. It's literally giving them tons of money, right? They just need to figure out dates, because it's just, you know, you got Flesh and Blood, you have Modern, which is blowing up like crazy. You have Pioneer, you have like literal other card games existing as well. It's hard to juggle. And as a business perspective, I'd imagine you just got to split it out, right?
Yeah, that was from my perspective, especially when the 1Ks were firing all the time and wanting to really kind of grow both sides of the border and grow their legacy communities. I was always really frustrated when you looked at the big picture from the store's point of view, and they would say, oh, well, there's a pre-release on this day and a modern tournament's happening at this time because there's a GP coming up. So really the only time that I can realistically do a legacy event is going to be on this Saturday. Yeah. And then all three stores within like a 300 kilometer distance all decide that same thing. And I would just get so frustrated and annoyed. I'm like, we need to coordinate this. Like, fracturing the community doesn't help anyone. So I would really advocate for our Vancouver stores to avoid the Mox dates and kind of go towards the front end. So I'm excited to see like what's coming out. Like, I think the Seattle community will definitely influence the Vancouver community and vice versa. Yeah.
I'm in UX, right? So I'm a UX designer by trade. And it'd be really, really awesome if, I don't know what software they use, but they're able to like project, hey, you're about to put it in an event. Here are all the other stores and the transparency of their events just to for your consideration, like that I've already submitted. I'm not sure if that's good or bad competition, but I'm sure ArcZap used to be a Seattle-based a tool that someone made, and they stopped maintaining it now because it was just too much work. But they literally used to put every single Magic store, Magic-related event on one giant Google Calendar, essentially. That was super handy when I first came to Seattle. I was like, what is ArcZap? And they're like, oh, some guy just has been anonymously maintaining all this and just putting every single competitive event on one giant Google Calendar and then on a website. But I just wished stores would actually coordinate or have some sort of like transparency map against, against their own region. That would really, really be helpful rather than them having to try to look and figure out, oh, these stores are doing then. I have to go to their website to check it out. I think that should be automated, right? Because everyone has to officially submit it to WotC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish. There's only so many of us to go around, and everybody honestly wants to support everything they can. So it's definitely a shame when they end up double booked.
Yeah, because like from a user's point of view, we see it from like, oh, we have options of four events this one weekend, but the stores only see it from their own perspective. But anyway, sorry, I shouldn't go too deep into it.
I mean, it applies. We've definitely had conversations locally with, several like connections. I think even Stronghold about like changing dates of different tournaments and stuff that happen, because it's like, hey, like there's a preservation series that weekend. Like, you know, we love that you're hosting a tournament, but I mean, we're kind of going to go to see Seattle.
It's in their best interest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing, right? Like, you want to make it easy for the stores to foster the community. And like, I would go through the effort of like looking ahead on other events and then just giving the local organizers FYIs to say, hey, in the next 3 months, here's dates. And if you were considering an event, here's three dates that would probably be good dates. Mm-hmm. And just little things like that, that help the organizers who actually kind of have all the, have the cheap space, want to foster the community and sell cards and all that, like make their job easy. Because when you consider, I don't even want to know the complexities of running an LGS, like it's just mind boggling, much harder than any jobs that we do, I'm sure. But like the amount of like audiences that you're trying to cater to.
Yeah.
Like legacy is typically an older age group in terms of what, who's attending an LGS. And we have the ability to be coordinated and to communicate effectively with them. So I think it's in everyone's best interest to do that. Yeah.
Yep.
I want to go to the next item, but I see that someone crossed it out.
Who crossed it?
Not serious. I just crossed it out. I thought, you know what? I thought we were talking about this. We can talk about it if there's more information.
Well, I
mean, we can or we can't.
Classic content. I mean, do we have more information?
Yeah, so I mean, I already mentioned some before, but yeah, so Puget Sound, as we spoke before, Puget Sound Battlegrounds coming up, and I don't want to say, I don't need to say too much. It's just an amazing event, and you know, definitely a good event that people should be checking out, especially because Dylan, one of the guys that run it, he's really good, supportive, and very ingrained in the community.
Yeah, it's nice to see. It's like a passion project, you know.
It is.
I want to make an event like this. And it's not like, oh, I think we'll make a bunch of money off of it. I mean, hopefully he does. But it always seemed like this doesn't really exist on the West Coast here, and I want to put that together. Because, I mean, like you, I went to the first one. I missed the second one. So very excited for the third.
Mm-hmm. It has team events as well. Day one has team events, which I'm super excited about. No, day two, sorry. Day two has team events, maybe. I'm not sure. One of the days have team events, and I just love team events. It's so
day
fun.
Day two has team events. Tell us about team events. Jeff poo-pooed it before we were, before you came on. He's like, I don't know about team events.
What?
So sell Jeff on team events.
Oh, okay. So I actually went to one just on Sunday. It was my first paper event, like I said. My first paper event ever in like 18 months was... Geek Fortress. They had a team event which was Pioneer, Modern, Legacy, and you just get to jam and play your own deck in your own respective format, and then have some of your closest friends be able to play and sort of sync with you. But also, you when you play team events, you win as a team. You don't ever count your record to like, oh, I went 4-1, or I went 5-1, you know, I went you know 3-2. You don't count like that. You count as a team, even though out of the three rounds, three formats, if two matches win, then the last one doesn't really matter, right? And generally, from what I've seen throughout the days, Legacy goes really fast. Modern generally goes slow. I believe they're playing Control, it goes really fast. And then Pioneer is like super slow because it's Pioneer, right? On Sunday, I took the Pioneer seat. Originally, I was going to play Legacy. As you know, I love Legacy, but I decided to swap the Pioneer player because the Pioneer player wanted to just play his new Legacy cards, and he didn't know anything about the format, right? So we're all Legacy players, to be honest. But I think I just knew Pioneer a little bit better because I watched the streams and stuff, and I know the meta. So, of course, I went and took my most interactive deck, which is Lotus Storm, which is basically Ant Storm and Pioneer. And then my friend's like, you're really playing that? I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to ignore the opponent every round and play it. But yeah, it was super fun. And I love casting Omniscience and Pioneer because no one really counters it. And Peer into the Abyss is legal as well, if you didn't know. So being able to draw half your deck is hilarious.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, resolving that in paper is a trip.
It was
the first
so
time
fun.
I did it, I was like, I guess I'll count my permanents in my hand of my graveyard divided by two.
Here we go. I just counted my library every time. It was just
I think I should have. Yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, I did it every single round. I fail wishes for Peer and then Peer myself, draw my whole deck, hidden strings, untap things. It was just great.
And you
sounds like jank.
I like the idea of team events. I really do. And we've talked before about trying to do something super janky, like a team unified Legacy, which would be fun. But as of like to date, my only actual experience of the team event is that Quinn and Rob and I signed up for a team sealed. What was that? Modern Horizons?
It was Ultimate Masters.
Oh, Team Seam. Yeah, Team Sealed is hilarious. Yeah.
It was Team Sealed Ultimate Masters. And we basically, it felt like we had like 2 hours to build decks. And then we like didn't even finish the first round yet. And one of our friends just showed up and played through an entire Legacy side event and three-0'd with Storm by the time we were waiting to play our first match. And that was just like, this sucks. And then we lost very quickly. And it was like, I'm done. Like, it's been half my day. It's been staring at this deck list.
We went like 1-3 2-1 once.
Yeah, but you get to share cards with your friends, which is awesome, right? You all crack your packs, and then you get to like make the best decks out of like how many boosters? There's like 18 boosters, right?
It was a lot. It was complicated because you had to like register what were like your sideboard cards. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very odd. I feel like a constructed team event would go a lot smoother.
Yeah,
you know, Lee, I really am enjoying having you on here because usually I'm the optimist trying to pull these two old curmudgeons along and like look at the positive side of things, and you're doing a great job at that. So thank you for that.
Next time you're at McBain, we'll give Lee a call.
Yeah. We had the fun uncle on last week, and I think Dylan did a great job in that as well. So
yeah.
It's an easy role to play, is just try to be optimistic.
When Dylan let us go, though, it's like when you have you're getting babysat and like you get to stay up late and watch like TV. That was Dylan. Jeff and I got real into the shit and he just let us go.
That's hilarious.
The only other thing I think I had listed I wanted to touch on, and you did this a bit before the mics went on, but I know you're obviously extremely involved with honestly like every part of the Magic community that you touch here. You know, you manage to get involved with setting that stuff up, and also you get very involved with like charity work and stuff like that. You mentioned giving away like any subs you get or whatever to charity, or making sure they get pushed somewhere else. And you know, beforehand you mentioned a thing you do in Sydney, right?
Yeah,
the Fidget Wizards. With that for a second.
Yeah, so I love doing charity work. So I guess a little portfolio of charity work was I raised about $2,000 for breast cancer in the Fidget Wizards group, but just hosting small tournaments by donated sealed stuff from the LGSs. And then I'll give them the opportunity to advertise their event one time on my Facebook group page in return. But also, you know, I put their name in the event as well and say, hey, you know, this store donated. So that was cool. Another cool event I did was I'm also the head of the Magic the Gathering at Amazon group. So we have about 800 people here. And we ran this was January 2020. We did a charity event where people donated some product, and we raised about $1,300 for the Australian bushfires. Do you remember the fires that were happening in Australia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we raised like $1,300 through all the donations and then just did a silent auction. And then COVID sort of got announced 2 months later, and I was just like, oh crap. Yeah, we sent money this way, which is great, but then now there's a gigantic pandemic that's stopping the whole world. But yeah, I love running these events and just helping out other people. And you know, it just might as well use my influence for good, right? I just love getting involved and meeting people and helping the community into connecting.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, one of the things too is like before I really like, you know, knew you, I'd see you around at the events. I get that nod, you know, you talk about. You're like, yeah, I know, I've seen that guy around. But like then I start noticing it's like you look at any reasonable sized Magic group in like the Pacific Northwest, and you're like, oh, Lee is an admin here.
Yeah. Oh yes, I'm admin of the MTG Stick Deals Canada, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Where I think I've bought so many cards off of that, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no, and I'm actually the price rules advisor. So when the group started, it was like 10 of us, all right? Michael Dixon and Robin and myself. And people just posting all the crap. And I was just like, yo, you need to set... I wrote up some rules for you. Here are 10 rules your group should run, and also you need to make sure that you hold a high quality bar of making sure that people make the posts more explicit and have all the details. And he's like, oh, cool, you seem to know what you're doing. Do you want to help run the page? I'm like, sure. And then ever since then, we've pulled out some more admins and moderators to the group. And yeah, I think holding a high bar is just better than people just spamming crap into the group. So that's how I got involved there. Just sort of volunteering my time to help out, and it seems to work out.
Yeah,
like, that reminds me that also, I have like a spreadsheet I need to post of like stuff I need to sell because I've been buying MHQ stuff.
I've definitely spent a good amount of money on the sick deals Facebook group.
I also design untapped.in. I don't know if anyone's ever played that. I was also the designer for that. I'm also designing that? Yes, I did. That was me with Pat in Queensland. I also am currently in the works of designing the Cockatrice web client. The open source team there. So I like designing. I like volunteering. Here and there. I like volunteering and doing passion projects, right? I have a side project I'm doing which is not finished yet, but it's called MTG Elf, where I'm collecting and creating bio pages for MTGO grinders. So if you want to make a wiki page about yourself, on your MTG results, MTGO results, even in your regular results, you can just open up an empty wiki page with your username, and then you can just start writing your achievements in there. Like, I top aided RTR Ravnica, I don't know. I won these trophy leaders. Because I figured all the information of your achievements in Magic generally just dissipates over time. So it would be a really nice place to just be able to write it all in one place.
Even, like, I've been trying to do for myself, just on my own tracking, like, kind of a list of known like Magic Online grinders, even just like linking it to like their Twitter or something. Cause you know, sometimes people have like different user accounts or whatever. And I think like, I'm pretty sure I know who this is and I just want to know. And having that as like a kind of centralized, like active thing would actually be super cool.
I made the platform. I just haven't finished getting the rest of the icons and the logos there, but it's still usable. So I'll share that out if anyone wants to see it.
Absolutely.
Do you guys have anything else you want to chat about, or Lee? Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Shout out, anything like that?
Oh yeah, so I guess one thing I want to say is shout out to the community in Seattle. They've been very welcoming and awesome. I really love the people here, and even just in Vancouver as well. The shout out to the people there. You were the Vancouver community. You were one of the first people that ever sort of took me in and like and helped me sort of make friends and become one with other people, like to people like Liam and Alfred and Bert and Kevin and yeah and Dustin, all these great people that I was hanging out there when I lived there. Awesome amazing people. Just also I want to say how welcoming the Magic the Gathering online streamer community has been, especially for Legacy. I know that people are just doing a lot of these people are just streaming for fun, right? And everyone's always very optimistic and positive and just like supporting each other back and forth. The fact that, like, example recently, Thraven Phil Gallagher was a very big deal streamer. He just sort of reached out to me and said, "Lee, love your videos. I want to stream with you. Pick a date, I'll be there." And that's just how easy it was, right? And I just love that. I love that people are just super nice and, do good things and good things will come back to you.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was another Risen Reef stream, right?
Yeah, so I figured he likes creatures. But yes, you're right. I call it elementals and fetches. Yes, you're right. I love value, as you can see. Yeah. Have you ever played a Mystic Forge and a Baby Ugin? Have you ever had those two cards in play?
I have not.
Oh, come on. Not even you, Brendan? Not even you? You haven't had a Mystic Forge and a Baby Ugin in play?
I have not. No, that sounds incredible.
I'll give you a list. You can try it out. It's like, it's basically Splinter Twin and Colorless, right? You get your whole deck is half price and you can cast your whole deck off Mystic Forge. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. You get two ways to like clear the top also.
Yeah.
You got homework, McBain.
I like this, McBain. I feel like you're like the, if there was a spike of the podcast, it's you. And I feel like your eyes have lit up a couple times where I'm like, yes,
yeah. Yeah, no, over. this is getting the juices flowing for sure. Yeah, that's something that I really try to take from all of these opportunities. I usually get like a competitive, spiky bent about things. And I said, yeah, that's all well and good. And I want to have fun. But like, there's an obvious correct answer here and I'm going to do this. Like, I have a hard time kind of going to that janky spice side of things. So this has been inspiring.
I'll just say two words to you that the deck list I'll send you. Ready? tangle wire.
Oh, you know this man's love language.
All right, right. Let's keep this.
Oh man, right. Getting all hot and heavy here. I got my four tangle wires from way back in the day, and I am ready to cast those things.
Right. I feel like we've gone completely just the smoothest transition to that's gas of all time. So McBain, I think who is gas this week.
Yeah, to keep the good vibes rolling. We've shouted them out before, but I specifically want to say the data collection team, they started a Patreon recently. And again, this is, I've mentioned this before. It's a huge effort. A lot of work is going into this and there's a big community. They have an active Discord. It's probably one of the most active Discords out there. There's a lot of engaged people on this and they started a Patreon, which is basically an effort to kind of pay, well, help fund these people and help fund the effort that they're undertaking for this. I signed up for this Patreon. It's like $10 a month. As like the legacy dad of Vancouver, who for years collected every week all of the legacy data of like who, what was being played and what the metagame was. Like people want to have that vibe and have that kind of information and that narrative. And if they, for whatever life reasons, aren't able to play Legacy for a month or they've kind of faded away, the number one thing in my mind that's going to bring them back is that kind of like active community voice saying like, you know, here's what's going on. Here's what's being played. Here's some results. And they kind of go, hey, you know what? I want to do that. I want to join in on that. Like, yes, it might be a new card that they say, hey, this is really cool. Urza Saga lets me play Standstill. I want to come back and play Legacy. My experience has been it's often that community aspect and that information comes from data, and an effort like this for the legacy data collection, I think is critical to the continued success and growth of legacy. So I, for one, am putting my money behind it. Lee, you mentioned you don't really take any money. We don't have a Patreon or anything like that. Like I'm always advocating for go put it where it can do good. And in the legacy community, I think this is a great spot for that effort. So that's gas. And if you have some extra money lying around each month, I think that's a great spot to put it. Jeff, how about you?
The fact that they volunteered for so long, it's amazing, right?
Oh, it's crazy. I've pitched in, I mean, only one time because I don't do that many challenges. But, you know, friend of me of the show, Elliot, does it near every weekend. And like the times, because you have to work around the MTGO client. You can't just go in and look at the replays unless you're still actively in the tournament. So if you start out like 0-3 in the showcase or whatever, like you're stuck playing the whole thing if you're one of the only people that volunteered to help. Because if you leave that tournament, you can't look at the replays anymore. And then you just can't get the information. So it's a ton of work. And it's literally like an entire day's effort for these people that often aren't even in... This sounds like a dig at Elliot. Often aren't even in the standings to compete for money anymore. I wanted to shout out this gas to something that's way less important and way less nice and is channeling kind of my inner McBain with a very silly old deck list that I came across browsing Reddit not that long ago. This is listed on MTG The Source as the Judge Destroyer. It's posted in 2015. It's pretty old. I don't know how I never saw this before. And I hope you guys haven't seen this before either. We'll put the link in the show notes because really me trying to explain this isn't going to do any amount of proper justice. But I'm going to try to start. So it's a decklist designed to try to melt somebody's brain, specifically a judge. So the game plan is that you put an Omniscience in play, and then you wish for an End of the Infinite and draw your entire deck, minus one card. You cast Final Fortune, go to an extra turn. You start ramping up your Pyromancer's Ascensions, which I think you just cast more show and tells and counter spells and stuff until you get to copy spells. You cast a Chroma Angel of Wrath, you know, the good old 6/6 flying, First Strike, Vigilance, Trample, Haste, Protection from Black and Red. You cast Burning Wish, and you get every card in your sideboard because you have a bunch of copies of Burning Wish. You cast... I mean, this doesn't even work anymore, but the really rules are. It absolutely doesn't. I'm lying. It does. I was thinking of Wish for Wish. You Golden Wish, you remand it, recast it, Wish for all enchantments, so you have your entire sideboard. You cast Opalescence. you cast Dual Nature. This is the first card I had to look up. This is a 6-mana enchantment, and whenever a creature comes into play, its controller puts a token copy of it into play. And whenever a creature leaves play, you get rid of all things with the extra name, whatever. But the main thing is that when you play a creature, you get a copy of it. You cast Doubling Season. It comes into play as a creature. You get a second Doubling Season. And then those exponentially go up. And then you cast the second Doubling Season you get. And you get, I can't even say this number. How, I don't know how many characters long this is. This is like
the decimals of pi.
Characters yeah. long. So you get like a billion copies of Doubling Season in play. And then if you cast Grip of Chaos and put like some counters on it, you just end up with this thing where you're forced to resolve Grip of Chaos because you have to know if this one thing is going to work. Because it's like, you just have to read this. So you just call a judge over and says you have like 2 to the power of like 1 million Grip of Chaos triggers that you have to resolve on a random number of targets. And, you know, the game won't be over until it's solved. Please help. So this actually came up when in the D&D set, there was the kind of Splinter Twin combo waiting for you to play this in Legacy, I guess, Lee, with that card where it's like whenever you roll a dice, you roll another dice also. And yep, then yep. the one where it's like when you roll, I don't know, over a 15, you like Splinter Twin something. Mm-hmm. And when you attack, you can just basically it just exponentially are forced to roll dice because it's
Yeah, yeah. So you attack. I drafted this card today. You attack.
Yeah.
And then you can copy another creature you can control.
Yep.
And there's a creature that doubles the dice roll. And then your chances of going infinite are like over 50%.
Right. You have to roll over 15 with like one of your many dice in order
yeah,
to do it.
Yeah. But once you hit that, you're like just basically, yeah. it's almost impossible to miss. Yeah.
I think they actually since, I think I saw a tweet or something from WotC about it. They might have changed it to a May, at least on Arena.
Yeah.
Because it was not a May. You have to do it.
Yeah. I saw someone do it on Arena Live when that was happening. They just kept getting all these tokens. And I'm like, I think it was Squad Chief or something. And he was just like, is this like, this just keeps happening. It won't stop. And I was like, this is so funny.
It feels like the kind of situation you come in, like I'm picturing like a software development meeting and they're like, okay, we have these new cards for the set. You got to put this in Magic Online. And they're like, okay, hey, wait, is this something that could happen?
I feel like that might happen in some companies, but probably not at the MTGO
right.
Scrum.
I mean, if they follow how they normally go, it probably just doesn't work.
Yeah, it'll break at a certain, it'll just run out of space in the like SQL file and then breaks.
Ooh, crash the entire thing for everybody? The ultimate undo bug?
I can't remember exactly what the story was, but there was two players who corroborated in like, I think it was some Legacy event, but it was like they wanted, all they wanted to do was draw the game. And they just drew. So like they actually had dozens and dozens of games in each match and just drew everything out.
That feels like, you guys ever go to a tournament and somebody's like, you know, if you and your opponent both don't like your starting hands after mulligans, you can just choose to draw the game and go to the next one. Has anybody ever told you this?
I feel like there's got to be some rule around like
it definitely
corroboration,
sounds
right?
like a Magic urban legend, right? Like, like what the fuck?
Speaking of urban legends, I'd love to see a talented actor, someone like MTG Remy, to act out the Platinum Angel story. Like, yeah, that would just be the best. If you're a Magic viewer, a listener, and you haven't read the Platinum Angel story, please do the justice and go read that. Go Google it. And read that. It's one of the funniest stories I've ever read.
I'll find it.
We'll try and link that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
Great.
I will be one of those people. I have no idea what you're talking about, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. No way. You we're have to read it. Treat. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to go last. I'm going to backpack off of Lee because he mentioned the MTGO streamer community. We talked about, I guess, six episodes ago. About how most of this podcast has existed during COVID. So I just wanted to shout out like the whole online Legacy community, because I don't know how we made it this far. But a big reason I know is that we get really talented, more popular than us people like Lee. reaching out being like, hey, can I come on the podcast, which is insane to me still. Or people like, you know, you mentioned Phil Gallagher, like retweeting when we have a new episode. Everyone's been incredibly supportive. We've been super grateful to like have people like you on. And we've just been super stoked every time anyone really gives a shit about what we have to say. And as we go into paper, I'm even more excited to get back to like meeting people in person and seeing them and talking to them. And so, yeah, a big shout out to all of us who stuck it out during COVID and kept playing Legacy. We're getting smaller and smaller, and we're hoping we can make that bigger and bigger again as we get back to kind of quote unquote normal.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, funny story. I don't listen to Legacy podcasts that often. The only podcast I actually listened to was this one. This was the first one I discovered. Your podcast here. Yeah, exactly. And right, Eternal Glory as well. So I really enjoy Eternal Glory. But this one as well, I listened to other podcasts, but I was like, I should listen to magic related stuff. This is what I love. And yeah, I stumbled on yours. So I haven't been listening ever since.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's high praise.
You, yeah.
You get both ends of the spectrum then. You get like the Eternal Glory, like pretty competitive. they're all, well, definitely Brian and Bryant are like very competitive, and Phil does both. He does your jank side of things, but he also is a competitive person. But they're always very articulate. They have a very strong, like, I think two of them are teachers in some degree, but like they're it's kind of like a lesson. They're like, in today's lesson plan, we'll be talking about this. And then you come to ours, which is the other end of the spectrum. Yeah. Where it's just like, let's have a fun time and talk about things. And I've always liked like having a community kind of bent to it as well. So again, it's been great to have you on for that. So again, maybe I'll just kind of say a big thank you from all three of us for coming on. It's been great having you, and I'm really excited for, like, I know I have my Puget Sound Battleground 3 tickets. I think Quinn's bought his already. Jeff is forever on the fence with everything, so don't.
I bought it.
Okay, never mind. Jeff is fully on the Puget Sound Battleground 3 side of the fence. So hopefully we can meet up down there and, you know, give each other the nod of.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Let's grab a photo. I would love to grab a photo with you. It won't cost you too much, but I'm sure that I could organize something.
Well, we know it'll go to a good cause. So that's excellent.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right. Lee, where can people find you? Because they should want to find you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm mostly found as one Mr. Lee, because there's only one Mr. Lee. And that's spelled number one, MRLEE, on Twitter and Twitch. All right, just six characters, one Mr. Lee. And on YouTube, because I made my Google account a million years ago, I was able to get youtube.com/Mr. Lee. There's no number one there, but that's just for YouTube. But everything else is just one Mr. Lee.
McBain, where can people find you?
You can find me at Servant Painter on Twitter. And Quinn?
Jeff.
He's so really, well rehearsed.
No. You're going to wrap us out. So, Jeff, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at JeffDKK.
And I'm on Twitter at Quinn Amore. You can find us all on Twitter at Canadian Thresh. And we will see you all on Two Thresholds. Thanks everyone for listening. And Lee, thanks again for joining us. Have a good night, everybody.
Willie!